Welcome to Short Time. It is Short Time with Vin and Dave. Vin Avenue, Dave Crossan with you on Sunday, March 5th, 2023. Vin Avenue with you, Dave Crossan with you. Dave, it is show number 57.
57?
You know, we were talking a little bit last week because we were thinking like, oh yeah, Lawrence Taylor, number 56. And then we were trying to think, like, all right, well, who's we're 57?
57. That's a tough one. Help me out.
Johan Santana,
when he was with the Mets. I should know that, with the Mets. Yes, okay.
No-hitter he threw, close quote.
I know. Don't get me started on that one. I know. Okay.
Francisco Rodriguez.
There you go. Another Mets.
Set a record with the Angels, also there with the Mets. And then I was curious to see. I was looking up before we hopped on the air this morning. I was trying to find some...
Did you say Clay Matthews?
Names that people know. Yeah, NFL.
Yep.
That was another one.
It's a tough one. Tough number. It's not a number you think of.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, hey, that's a number that a lot of pro athletes wore.
Correct.
Where it's like, oh, okay. You know, when you say like 23, you think of Jordan. You think
of LeBron James, right.
Yeah. Henrik Lundqvist.
I get it.
56, Lawrence
Taylor.
And so forth.
It just doesn't stand out as a number that you see or, you know, people wear that number because of somebody famous who wore it before.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, there's not a lot of ones that people would know.
Well, I think the ones we just mentioned would be it, unless we're not thinking of somebody, which
apparently Nelson Figueroa, another former Met, wore 57 at
What's
some
up
point.
With the Mets and 57? Come on now.
I don't know. Like, Baseball Reference has that wrong. They also have Gary Sanchez wearing number 57, which never happened. He wore 24 with the Yankees, so you know we're going to move on from that.
Our entire routine on the number 57.
Number 57s and everything.
That's
else.
That's all we have for today.
We're moving on. Number 58. Now that I'm thinking about, which is for next week, is one of my favorite Giants players,
Carl Banks. Right.
I was thinking Antonio Pierce.
Or,
I think
that Gary Reasons. Wait, Carl Banks, was he 58?
I want to say Banks wore 55.
And then, was it Gary Reasons?
Antonio Pierce wore number 58 on one of the last Super Bowl teams the Giants had, big linebacker.
Okay.
Could use another Antonio Pierce on this Giants team, but we'll save that for another show. although, big news during the week, the New York Rangers acquired Patrick Kane.
Yes, that is big news.
Countering the Devils' recent moves, but you know what, Dave? I'm excited. Rangers went all the way to the conference finals last year against the Lightning.
Very impressive.
This will be the year. I'm feeling good, Dave.
Okay, I
think
like
this will be the year the Rangers bring home the Stanley Cup.
There it is, buddy.
We've been waiting for 29 years. You know, I was talking to my younger brother, Paul, who's also a Rangers fan. It's like split in our household. My brother, Paul, my dad, and I are all big-time Rangers fans, and then there's some Devils fans in our house.
Okay.
The last time the Rangers won the Stanley Cup, I was 2 years old, and that was 1994.
2 years old.
My
My
brother
goodness.
Paul
okay.
was born in 1998. He wasn't even born yet, so we're looking forward to celebrating a cup that we can remember.
I think you have a
it's
good possibility
been a while.
Of doing
we've,
it this
we've
year.
We've waited a long time.
I agree.
You know, we got the players that could do it.
Okay.
We got a great guest who can do all sorts of things on the show this morning. Well, in real life, too. Tom Rizzo.
That's right.
A police captain here
looking
in New Jersey.
To that
He's been on our show in the past. I've talked to him for news stories just to... He's just a really great guy. He's a cool
very
guy,
very energetic,
too.
Enthusiastic.
Very transparent. He's very direct.
That's a great point.
Always love talking to my pal Tom Rizzo, and he's going to be joining us in a little bit, talk about police challenges facing police.
Which there
police
are a lot.
Issues in society today, not just New Jersey, but across the country. We're going to dive into a lot. He's also the author of a book that came out a couple years ago, Kapikaze, A Crucible to Manage, Mission Impossible. Diving into what that is. I've read the book cover to cover before we had him on last time. It's a really great book. It's very thought-provoking. It gives you some clarity and insight. You're like, oh, wow.
Right.
I didn't
Here's
realize this
on.
Kind of thing happens within police departments. So it's really great. And it's not an expensive pickup. It's like, I think, like $11 on Amazon.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's
looking
easy
forward to
read,
the interview.
Easy read. But, Dave, I was writing some articles up during the week. Everybody could check out at 943thepoint.com, 943thepoint app. If you're looking directly for it, just go to news, click on my name, and then you'll be able to find all the articles. Or you can go to the Short Time tab at 943thepoint.com and find it there as
well.
There
it is.
Now,
okay.
After all of that,
with that being said,
all that housekeeping, strange New Jersey laws that you may have never heard of, but are on the books.
Strange. Okay.
You're like,
You didn't realize this was a law.
Well, Dave.
What do you got?
In case you plan on motoring through on the sidewalks, no speeding on the sidewalk.
With what? A scooter or what?
You're gonna laugh at this one a little bit. Under New Jersey law, you are not allowed to speed on a sidewalk in a vehicle. That's a given.
Right. I get that.
On horseback at a speed of more than 4 miles per hour.
Well, that's why I was late this morning because of my horseback riding to the studio. Okay, interesting. Okay.
So next time you think about riding your horse on a sidewalk.
On a sidewalk.
No more than 4 miles per hour.
No more.
All right.
Okay.
Or you could face between $50 and $200 in fines.
That's a tough one.
Watch yourself, Dave.
All right, will do.
No showboating on your bike.
Showboating. What does that mean? Like lifting up the handlebars to pop a wheelie? Is that what you mean?
So under New Jersey law, when riding a bike, you are not allowed to ride with your feet off the pedals both hands removed from the handlebars.
Trying to see what that looks like. Okay. And let's say you do that. What is the penalty?
Well, you also can't practice any tricks or fancy driving in a street, and only one or two people, depending on the amount of seats, are allowed to sit on the bike. So like you can't have one of those situations where you got two or three people sitting on your bike,
right, but if you have the banana seat, I guess that could be two people.
Right, right. I mean,
if
obviously there's two or three seats.
Okay. So wait, if I'm hearing you correctly, that would be, so you can't do any of these stunts or fancy driving on a street.
May get a little summons or a warning.
Do we know what the penalty is? Not that I'm looking to do it anytime soon.
Falls under the NJDOT and New Jersey Title 39 of the Motor Vehicles and Traffic Regulation Laws.
Okay.
So I guess the punishments vary depending. Or it could be a warning.
It could be a warning, okay.
Dave, your bike must have a bell.
Bring. Okay, so if I'm coming up on somebody, I give them the warning.
Your bicycle has to have a bell or other audible device that can be heard at least 100 feet away. But not a siren or a whistle.
Because that could frighten somebody.
Sure. Or an animal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave, it's not Christmas time yet, but think ahead here.
I will.
No horse-drawn sleigh without bells.
I was going to say without snow. Yes.
In the winter we've had, I mean, at least for us down here, I mean, North Jersey had a snowstorm earlier in the week, but at least around the Jersey Shore we haven't.
Okay.
You are not allowed to drive a horse attached to a sleigh or sled unless there are a lot of bells attached to the harness.
A lot of bells.
Why?
Okay. Well, just to
warn
people.
Warning to everybody that you're nearby.
That would make sense.
The way I explain it kind of sounds like a joke you'd tell at a comedy club. But
well, I think that's important, especially if you're walking and then somebody comes up behind you and you should warn them. Here's the noise. Here's the bells. Here I come.
Oh, listen, and going back to the thing about bikes, one thing that concerns me about bikes or just moving around at night, early morning, no reflectors on bikes, no reflectors when people are running nearby. It's dark.
It is.
And sometimes there are areas that are not as well lit as others, and people are just kind of riding bikes or moving across. What else bothers me, whether it's night or day, is people not wearing bike helmets. It's amazing to me in a bad way.
In New Jersey, is that a law that you have to have a bike helmet?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe in some motorcycles as well.
Well, I would figure the motorcycle, but maybe a bicycle.
But it just bothers me. It feels like when I was a kid, I mean, certainly my parents told us to wear bikes when we were going out, wear helmets on bikes.
Right.
There
it is.
Go out and wear your bike. But like with how wear the helmet,
everything you do,
and even kids, my friends, whatever. I feel like sometimes when I drive around, see a lot of kids that are just not wearing a bike helmet.
I could see that. Well, let me ask you this:
maybe they sneak out of the house and do it. I don't know. I don't want to blame everything on parents, but it's just like why aren't all kids wearing helmets? And I love what Tom's River Police does in the summer. They do. I forget what the name of the program is, but basically they see kids wearing bike helmets in the summer. They'll give them like a little coupon or a ticket voucher to go get an ice cream cone.
I like that
a lot.
It's
Operation Brain Freeze or something like that, where they reward kids for doing what they should be doing and wearing a helmet while riding a bicycle.
Let me ask you this. Okay.
And kudos to Times River Police. They do a great thing with that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you have a bicycle, you also need to have a light. Am I right or am I wrong on that? Do you need a light?
I believe so.
I want
to
say
to
yes.
At least have some sort of reflectors
on your
bike.
Well, I know about
bike.
A reflector would make sense,
yeah,
but
light
do you
or
have
reflector.
To have some sort of a light
yeah, to show
in front and back? I believe that's the case.
I think so.
Just throwing it
to
out
at least
there.
Show that you're there and you're like, hey,
right.
I'm here. Because you never know. Because things, all sorts of things happen when it's dark. You never know when a deer is going to dart across the road.
Correct.
So drivers have to have all this extra focus on at night. And it makes it easier and safer for everybody involved if everybody's doing what they should be doing. Drivers and people on their bikes and riding or going out for a late night run or an early mm-hmm. morning run while it's still dark. And that's the other thing that bothers me, too. When people are just kind of strolling through the road or whatever. Like,
what do you mean?
It happened a couple weeks ago in the middle of the day.
You're talking about when you're driving your car and somebody's just not really paying attention.
Like, I was driving from Tom's River into Brick to go to work out last week. And there was this guy just walking on the side of the road. I'm like, dude, there's literally a sidewalk like 5 inches to your right.
Was he going with or without against traffic?
He was going with traffic, which is dangerous.
No, that's the worst thing you could do. How about this?
Like, why?
Okay. What do you think about this? You slow up. Somebody's crossing the road, okay? And they're at a point where it's not really where they should cross, but they've decided that this is the direction they're going to go. So I slow up, and then they take their time. Just kind of maybe they're checking the cell phone or just
that's another pet peeve.
Well, especially if it's an area where they're not supposed to be doing it. You know, they're just aimlessly crossing, and it's like, okay, you got it. Go ahead. We're fine here. But then to take your time in a way that it's like, well, maybe
it's just not courteous.
Maybe check that text message when you're on the other side of the road.
A couple more of these.
Oh, please.
So we all love Fast and the Furious, you know, Dominic Toretto and the boys and girls and so forth.
What if I were to tell you I've never seen one of them?
Dave.
I know. I've seen bits and pieces.
You have some binge watching to
do. I've seen a little here, a little there. That's what I hear. People love them.
They're really great movies.
Okay. Which one is your favorite?
The tenth one is coming out this year.
Tenth one?
Yeah.
My goodness.
I don't know if I have a favorite. They all have their unique things, and I love the cast in each and every one of them.
Who was your favorite cast member if you had to have one?
That's tough.
Name the first one that comes to mind.
I think Toretto, because I think he's, a boss.
Toretto is played by?
Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel, okay.
He's like jacked out of his mind.
He's fast.
He's got a little bit of an edge to him.
Okay.
Family Guy as well.
Played by?
Vin Diesel.
Oh, no, you said
Dominic
Family
Toretto.
Oh, I thought you were saying that there's another.
He is a Family Guy.
Oh, he is a Family Guy. I thought you were saying there was somebody else named that. Gotcha. My bad.
So it's a good reference when talking about laws and stuff. So no Fast and the Furious races, Dave.
Okay.
So the kinds of drag races that they have.
Okay.
Hilarious to watch on film. Incredibly dangerous and illegal on any road.
New Jersey does not want that.
So it may seem obvious here, but you can't race or drive your car to achieve a speed record or take part in putting together such an event.
Nope, don't want that.
Heavy fines will be coming your way
at
a minimum.
As they should.
Hopefully, no, God forbid, accidents or any injuries.
No, we don't want that.
You can't overload your car with metal.
Explain.
Metallica, Pantera. No.
You got me on that one. There you go. Okay. Like, give me an example. Like, overload it with metal.
So you're
like,
not allowed to load a vehicle or drive a vehicle so jam-packed with iron or other material that it may strike together unless it is properly secured so it doesn't make any unnecessary noise. Why, Dave?
Oh,
because it can be dangerous and also startling to other drivers.
Yeah, no, I get it. Okay, fair enough.
No drinking and hunting.
No drinking and hunting.
There is no
meaning
drinking
like alcoholic
and hunting
beverages.
Allowed. You also can't have any alcohol on you while you're hunting, or that's a few hundred dollars
you'll
have to
pay. Well,
that's
what you're talking about. You're talking about alcohol. You're not just talking about having a water. You're talking about alcoholic beverages.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure. Okay.
No boozing and hunting.
Got it.
No gambling allowed in wildlife areas.
Explain that one. What does that mean? No gambling in wildlife.
You are not allowed to gamble in any way, shape, or form on any national wildlife refuge. If you do, you could be fined $150.
Wow. Okay.
So
keep that in
mind.
Leave
your cards and chips at home, Dave.
Will do.
And then there's some others. Let's see.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's some more you could check out. All in the 94.3 The Point app.
That was fun. I like that.
Yeah, those are a few we wanted to give away. They're like, interesting.
Okay.
So next time, just
Gotta watch out.
Think about things, Steve. The lights,
especially
the bells,
the horse
whistles.
Riding. I have to be careful because I have a tendency when I go to a meeting or I come here,
you're trying to get from one place to the next.
No, got
to
be careful, buddy.
No more than 4 miles an hour on the sidewalk with that horse, Steve.
I can do it, but I have to be under 4 miles an hour. Got it. There you go. Good to know. I'm writing this down.
Watch yourself from the horse.
Got it.
No trying to imitate John Wayne out there.
No, won't do it. Won't do it. Okay, got it. All right, this is good to know.
Yeah, so some fun stuff.
Absolutely.
Also, got another article up everybody could check out during the week. 100 reasons why New Jersey has the best beaches. 100 amazing views.
So
100 amazing views of Jersey Shore beaches. Like 100 pictures of different beaches and different angles of the beaches across the Jersey Shore. So check out all the pictures, 100 pictures of beaches across the Jersey Shore up on our app.
What is considered the best beach in all of New Jersey? Do we have that answer? I know Cape May is always up there.
All perspective.
That's true.
The best beach is Island Beach State Park because that's my favorite.
Okay,
there's no factual behind that.
I like that.
You could say the beach in Asbury Park is the best.
Asbury Park.
And some magazines
Brick,
agree.
You know, has
but
some
you know,
nice
somebody out
Belmar,
there listening
right?
may say, hey, what about Point Pleasant Beach? What
Point
about
Pleasant's
Manasquan?
Great
what
beach,
about Ortley
yeah.
Beach and Long Beach Island?
You're right.
What about all these other beaches in Monmouth and Ocean counties?
Buddy, you know,
there is no correct answer. There is no right or wrong answer. The best beach at the Jersey Shore is the one you love to go to the most.
There it is.
And that's
and you heard it here first.
Listen, no matter what anybody says, the best beach is the one where you have the your
you
favorite
and your
memories.
Family enjoy
There's
it
no
with your friends.
Factual
yes,
like, hell, hey,
it.
This is the best beach out there. We have a lot of great beaches at the Jersey Shore.
It's true.
All of them are special
Depends
in their own unique way.
That's what you're looking way. For. I agree. Okay, fair enough.
We don't need rankings.
No rankings.
What we do need is to take a quick break because Tom Rizzo's waiting on the other side of the door here. He's our guest on the show this morning talking about police issues, his book, and so much more.
Looking
Stay with us
that.
Right here on Short Time with Vin and Dave on 94.3 The Point.
Hello, this is Chef David Burke on Short Time with Vin and Dave on 94.3 The Point. And if you could see us, you'd know the three of us have perfect faces for radio.
Whether you are in the early stages of investing, getting ready to retire, or planning your estate, you need a financial planner who will guide you on a clear path with honesty and transparency. Shoreline Wealth Management provides clarity through the complexity. Shoreline's system is straightforward. They will understand your financial circumstances, identify goals, analyze current plans, and customize a path to position you to reach your goals. Shoreline Wealth Management is your financial anchor. Visit shorelinewealth.com for more information today. Shorelinewealth.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA. SIPC.
Welcome back to Short Time with Vin and Dave. Vin Avenue, Dave Crossen with you here on Short Time, 94.3 The Point. Sunday morning, joining us is Tom Rizzo, who's been on the show in the past, a police captain here in the great state of New Jersey, author as well of the book Kapikaze that he talked about on our show in the past, Crucible to Manage, Mission Impossible, also goes all over the country to discuss not only the context of the book, but the state of police in society today and so much more. So before we dive into anything, Tom, welcome on back. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here.
So since you wrote the book and put it out and started going on tour and teaching classes and speaking at all these different events and engagements across New Jersey and across the country, how have you seen any part of what you wrote, any part of the narrative change in a positive way or in a negative way that still needs work in society?
So it's actually ironic. I'm seeing, I guess, hope. I'm seeing places that economics might not be the best. Budgets might be under the same type of restraints that we see throughout the country. Yet morale in certain places by simple means of empathy and connection are causing robust recruitment initiatives. Again, and it's all free. It's not limited to resources. This is just in the way that they're treating people within the walls of their building that's having a reciprocity effect in their community. So I'm seeing it work in terms of not because they're my theories. I'm seeing this as basic human notions and treating people like human beings, not as police officers per se. So it's not so polarized. And it's working. And I'm so in the same breath, while I'm somewhat discouraged and disparaged when I see some things that happen, I'm very blessed to be able to get out there and travel. So I'm not cloistered, and I see different communities that have far less than what we have up here in the Northeast that are doing very well.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you've come across, or that that you've thought of as you're traveling the road or talking to police in other states about any kind of challenges, any kind of issues that they're looking at internally, or how to deal with certain problems or issues in their own local communities?
I see it as twofold, and a bifold problem is communication and connection, those two things. There's definitely a lack of communication. So that's why, obviously, you know, the class, the full day class I teach is the Ivory Tower, because I talk about the disconnect. It's not because administrations are evil and the working class is being disparaged. It's just that disconnect.
Right.
I still think overwhelmingly administrations mean well. But again, they're being communicated by oversight committees, legislative bodies, politicians, who don't necessarily have any type of stakehold in the application, the practical application of these policies. And then that's being poorly communicated to the ground level troops, who then fail in their endeavors to, you know, deploy these tactics in the field. And yet they're then the ones to have the darts thrown at them, when in fact the connection to the so-called people we're supposed to be serving is what's being sacrificed. So I'm seeing that the communication and the connection are interrelated. I think that it's failing us for certain.
What parts of communication do you think need the most improvement now, in New Jersey or across the country with the governing body, with the police department, within the police department, to give as much transparency as possible to anything and everything?
I think that we jumped several beginning stages. So in the spirit of transparency, we'll go right to showing body camera footage of, let's say, a fatal shooting, which, okay, I understand why people want that transparency.
Right.
But we skip steps 1 through 2, 3, and 4, let's say. What do I mean? When policies are updated, when certain restrictions are placed upon police, we hold those, you know, very close to the breast pocket, and we don't share that, when in fact I think that we should. OPRA and these public disclosure acts already, people at any given time could get our policies. Of course, that doesn't breach any type of security measures. But my point is, why not share with the public, hey, listen, 4 steps were added to a routine call for service. And I'm being illustrative, a domestic incident, let's say, right? Well, there's 3 more forms now that are required to be completed by a police officer, AKA, which is going to take now X amount of more time. There's restrictions now on pursuits. Let's share this information so the public does not get frustrated when they see us acting in a certain way, when we're asking certain questions, when we're... So I guess what I'm trying to say is my definition of transparency is being transparent.
Good point.
In the beginning, in both the pros and the cons.
Right.
It's not complaining. It's not throwing legislations or attorney generals or politicians under the bus. It's just being transparent. I'm not casting blame. I'm not saying thumbs up to the left, thumbs down to the right, or vice versa. I'm saying there's a new policy in place. Mm. It now will take extended calls, you know, routine calls for service will be extended. Response time, you know, burdens on our resources. Let's just be honest. You could go on HGTV and see a step-by-step procedure on how to build a house. Contractors aren't worried. Right? I'm just saying.
Yeah,
so let's just
point.
Be transparent. Yeah. We can't chase a car for XYZ. So if you see it go by, and so you see it and you wonder why we don't do it, well, here is why. These crimes have ticked up. Well, who better to ask? Well, answer it. I think police officers are the worst when it comes to advertising what we all know, but we feel like a gag order has been placed on us in fear of retribution and retaliation or some type of, you know, stain on the industry. But everybody knows it's happening.
I guess in the case of New Jersey, I mean, how do you think this is challenged? Law enforcement agencies, police of any rank, I guess with the public perception of things, just to your point earlier, like, oh, why aren't they investigating this, or why aren't they pulling this car over or looking into this, when the public, most of the public, perhaps doesn't know what restrictions or rules are in place that were put into place by an attorney general or by the governor or administration along those lines, where it's people are blaming police for not doing certain things or doing certain things, but they're just following the rules and guidelines that were put in place above them.
Again, I think because nobody ever teaches or nobody ever preaches the importance and the significance of communication and communication skills. With that comes courage. You might have to talk about a narrative that's not going to be received well. you have to be able to do that with emotional intelligence so that you're not sitting there taking sides. You're not implanting your opinion. I have no problem, me personally, and I know a lot of people like this, I have no problem talking openly and candidly about it.
Right.
Whether it's, which is why I did my book the way I did.
Yeah.
Whether to an oppositionist or a supporter. These are the facts. I've heard leaders say, oh, but if we give out our policies about, you know, pursuits, then the criminal element will know what we're doing. I said, well, they have access to it regardless. Go on YouTube, file an Oprah request. They could get these policies. They're on the websites.
Yeah.
So it's not a secret. We're the ones acting like it's a secret. And then we get frustrated when the message or the advertisement gets hijacked by somebody who's not a supporter of ours and paints us in a different light. Well, we had the opportunity to paint that picture and we didn't. Simple. I just think just painting the accurate picture, not taking sides, not throwing shots at each other.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about it. This is what we can do. This is what we can't do.
Do you think that there should be more transparency when a change does happen, a change in policy, a change in rule for what police have to go through by a governing body, whether it's a local governing body or the state, the governor, attorney general, whoever's putting these into place, that they should tell the public everything instead of just saying, this happened, so this is why we're doing it.
I think. Well, listen. I mean, I can only talk about the state of New Jersey, let's say,
right.
But that is advertised. They don't hide it. I think it's the police department specifically that need assistance in how to market this. And what I'm saying is, if you go on Facebook, everything now. Let's talk about the modern era. It's all about Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. I don't think there's anything wrong. Again, sides aside, opinions aside.
Right.
Hey, public announcement to my community. XYZ was updated. This now means this is what we can do. This is what we can't do. It's, again, you're going to have people be critical. You're going to have people be supportive. Doesn't matter what side they're on. At least information is power. We're not doing it, yet there's blogs, there's podcasts, there's YouTube channels who are doing it. And then we, as human beings, cops aside, get frustrated, and then we take that frustration and anger out on people. It's just, this is a people thing.
Do you feel that overall in New Jersey, I know there's a lot of great chiefs in law enforcement across Ocean and Monmouth County that are representing law enforcement well, but do you feel that there is any kind of disconnect between law enforcement in New Jersey and the governing body as a whole, Governor Murphy and his administration, or anybody else, that there says we are expressing what we feel is going well, what's not going well, but we don't feel we're being heard as well on this issue or that issue?
Well, I don't know that there's anything on purpose. You know, I wouldn't say that. I think that, sure, if you just look at numbers, if law enforcement is going to be responsible for doing something, they should have the lion's share in terms of input, right?
Mm.
Only because,
sure.
And that's not because of just being any type of presumptuous. It's
right.
Just that if we're going to be the ones to be doing it, I think we should have the most say in terms of talking about, let's talk realistically if this is practical or not, and
yeah.
Here's why. But I think that's a conversation where maturity has to take place. You have to be able to do it sincerely with opinions aside. I think emotions run too high sometimes. And, you know, both, you know, opposite sides don't attract, let's say. But, no, you know, I think that there's a disconnect in terms of, again, that we've caused ourselves. If we don't communicate it ourselves as to why this isn't working or why this would work better, but instead we talk about it around a campfire, I'm talking about police personnel,
yeah.
Then we're not doing any good. So, again, I don't think it's incumbent upon the governor or anybody else as to why they should or shouldn't advertise. I think that every department I see has their own means of communicating to their communities. Right? We do it for other things. So I think it's incumbent upon us to communicate it ourselves. I've always said that. Be in control of your own narrative. Control your own narrative. Opinions aside. No, I don't think it's a good look to be, you know, polarized and throwing shots at each other, because
right.
Then that polarizes other people.
Yeah.
I'm talking about just the facts, like, you know, Joe Friday would say, just the facts.
Just the facts.
Yeah, and put it out. Otherwise, people don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is I've never had a problem being an open book, and that means talk about the good, talk about the bad, talk about the ugly, whatever
yeah.
It is that you want to talk about.
Whatever it is laid out.
But let's lay it out so that at least people could say, you may not like it or love it, but at least hopefully you understand.
What do you think, in just hearing from not just around Jersey, but other communities across the country, that the public is most interested in trying to find out? I think just in the age of social media, perhaps at any time you hear that there is a fire, there is a shooting, there's something going on in your community, like, oh, what happened? Or an alarm goes off at a school. What happened? I need to know now. That there's just like so much more demand on social media or otherwise, the demand for information from the public, just because they're eager to learn more. Is it something along those lines or something else? Do you find that communities near and far just want police departments to be transparent about, I guess, as much as possible without jeopardizing any kind of investigation?
That's such a, it's such a delicate balance.
Yeah.
You know, I say all the time, I know this because I'm biased. I'm in, you know, obviously I'm on the law enforcement side of things.
That, yeah.
It's never about withholding information. Like, nobody takes joy in doing that. You always try to empathize and say, hey, if I was on the other side of the fence, I'd want to know too.
Sure.
It's just so frustrating, though, when we also have to worry about the efficacy and the, and I guess the effectiveness of the job we still have to do. So we never want to do anything or prematurely put something out that then, you know, in this day and age, you can never retract. Once it's out there, it's out there.
Right.
And so it creates such a fear and an anxiety. I'd be lying if I said it didn't. And I've seen it done really well throughout the state by some examples where they do, I think, a great job at sharing, you know, communicating. But I think, unfortunately, people don't, you know, they don't accept that well. They always right away go to conspiracy theory of, oh, they're withholding this. There must be a state. It's just so difficult. You know, again, I've seen it even before. Forget all the rules and the statutes. Just the human basic, you know, I guess, respect of respecting people's privacy. Like, you know, I know some things that you wouldn't want to put out. It's gruesome, or maybe it's embarrassing. So it's,
sure.
You know, some extended family may not know yet, let's say, that type of thing. But unfortunately, that falls short of what people accept nowadays. So I think that's created a burden for sure.
Do you find, and just across the country as well, do you find that law enforcement feels pressure to release any kind of information just to satisfy the masses, so to speak, in any case?
I think not to satisfy the masses, because I think that the culture, the industry as a whole, and I'm being very careful here to speak as a culture and an industry by myself, but I would say no. I think that we've given up on that it's going to satisfy anything.
Mm.
This belief or this opinion has become now, in my opinion, a reality that we feel as if you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Go ahead, release it, then you get criticized. Don't release it, then you're hiding something. It's like, my goodness. It doesn't. Then you do release it, and it's still, you know, it's not like, okay, it's admonished now. Here it is, clear cut.
Yeah.
You're seeing it right unfold in front of you,
right.
And you still don't get that some type of like, okay, I've been vindicated now. They'll say, anybody with a set of eyes and ears can watch this and say, oh, we understand. We wait for that. Drum roll, please. But the show never goes on. And I'm telling you, it happens all the time throughout the country where, you know, you see it from a distance. And you'll say, oh, come on, that's clear cut. Anybody who sees that will say they understand why the police did what they did or didn't do what they didn't do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you wait. That next segment's on the weather, though. So you're like, all right, I guess we're not going to say talk about that. So that's the frustrating point. Sure. So the pressure to do it? Sure. Knowing that, feeling it's going to satisfy anybody? Surely not. No way. No way.
Sometimes I feel like just with anything in life, there's just no
true.
Satisfying certain people.
No.
People are just, oh, that's not good enough. I need more. Like,
but I have to tell you sincerely, though, something like that, so minuscule, so small, goes miles to the morale and the support and the culture. When you have somebody, again, I'm not talking about, you know, a blue line parade.
Right.
I'm saying just something so simple as to, hey, listen, I'm critical when they go bad, but for this one, I'm supporting them. In my opinion, they did everything professional. They did it right. They did the best they could. My goodness, you know, hats off. It goes miles. It goes miles. I don't know how else to say it except I've experienced it and I've talked to folks and they say, yeah, that's what we needed. That was the breath of oxygen to reignite us, sure.
Tom, I have to go to a quick break, but I want to discuss more about your book and the state of law enforcement in the country right now. Can you hang around?
Yes.
More Short Time with Vin and Dave and Tom Rizzo, author of Kapikaze, A Crucible to Manage Mission Impossible, and a police captain here in New Jersey, right after this on 94.3 The Point.
Let's face it, investment concepts and financial planning can be very intimidating and confusing. Shoreline Wealth Management addresses that feeling head on. Their goal is to educate you while offering financial advice without buzzwords and jargon. Shoreline includes you in the process and makes you comfortable every step of the way on your path to financial freedom. Shoreline Wealth Wealth Management is your financial anchor. Visit ShorelineWealth.com for more information today. Shoreline Wealth Management, with offices in Manchester and Manahawkin. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Hey, this is UFC championship fighter and Toms River High School East alumni Frankie Edgar, and you're listening to Short Time with Vin and Dave on 94.3 The Point. Dave and Vin, these guys are the buzz.
Welcome back to Short Time with Vin and Dave. Vin Avenue, Dave Crossan with you. With us here this morning is Tom Rizzo, a police captain here in New Jersey and author of the book Kapikaze, A Crucible to Manage Mission Impossible. We've been talking about different issues, challenges facing law enforcement, not just here at the Jersey Shore or in New Jersey, but across the country, as well as Captain Rizzo goes across the country speaking in communities in 39 states now about the state of law enforcement and any number of issues, to put it, for lack of a better word, facing many different communities across the country. I wanted to start this segment with something just top of mind as facing law enforcement here in New Jersey. I mean, I've seen it. I know you have as well, with different police chiefs or police officers who've been on the job long enough to retire, just retiring early, whether that's 40s or 50s, when they're still top of their game, so to speak. But I think some have sort of cited the restrictions and laws that have put in place in New Jersey by the Murphy administration, or the pressures of society or other issues, or like, these are good guys, the good police chiefs or women as well. The men and women in blue who have retired early as a police chief or as an officer because of the restrictions, the rise in crime, the issues with bail reform, any number of issues that sort of relate along those lines. And numbers are sort of dwindling with the amount of men and women who are joining law enforcement in New Jersey. I mean, what is your take on all this and just kind of what law enforcement in New Jersey is facing right now and the amount of what seems like rising pressures?
So I think if we've ever had the debate before, is it a profession? I think now would be the answer to that question. There's just even talking about licensing, which I'm a fan of, for the record. I just think that there's certainly more requirements, there's certainly more pressures, there's certainly more certifications that are linked to the profession today than there were, let's say, like when somebody like I started. So I think that, like anything else, you know, more things added to the plate, and if somebody has an option to endure the, you know, more challenges and heightened challenges, or take, you know, another avenue, and you have a choice to say, well, I guess, you know, if there's a time to bow out, it would be under pressure, then I would take that time. So I think that you're seeing that. I think what's scarier to me is the recruitment issue, when I know you have municipalities fighting with each other. And I say that not physically, but over viable candidates. That's what makes it tough. So I know that people are scratching their heads wondering what they could do to attract people so that, you know, we don't become an endangered species. I mean, you're talking now hiring bonuses. You're talking about incentives never seen before, because I think people are recognizing and realizing, you know, where we're at and where we need to be.
Do you find that police departments in Ocean and Monmouth County, or just across New Jersey, are having a hard time just trying to find the right amount of personnel to have on a given shift? Like, we need X amount of officers or X amount of people in our department to be able to function without burning anybody out.
Well, I think that, is that known? Sure. Is that being handled, you know, effectively? Surely not. And that's because why? Nobody wants to put more financial burdens on their municipalities. And then you have governing bodies who certainly don't want to go ahead and face their communities and say, we're raising taxes, right? So it's a multi-faceted approach and dilemma that we're dealing with. But I think that's where you have groups doing studies and per capita studies and certain type of breakdowns that they could statistically show, hey, we don't have the adequate coverage here. No, you know, it's unfortunate, though, because nobody wants to hear, hey, we need more police and more. As soon as you mention that at the same time, you know, it incites, you know, the opposite to say, no, we want less. So I think it's a very special issue that has to be handled delicately. But I think that if you were to sit there and show an intelligent approach just by nature of building, increased population, increased requirements, right? There's just more things required. There is no longer, you know, hey, we don't handle this. We're handling more in terms of several things and several aspects of community service. So you need the personnel to handle that.
What do you, in talking to other law enforcement across the country or in this state even, where are some of the bigger challenges lying with how to get to work every day, how to communicate different concerns within your own department, you know, the man or woman in law enforcement or whatever, to communicate any issues or concerns that you have within your own department or within law enforcement overall, how to communicate with local legislators or people across the country to get out the points to say, hey, you know what, these are things that we could do to make things better on any number of given issues.
Again, I think it's just fear of reprisal and being cast out as a certain that you're trying to, you know, go against folks. If I think right now people are so worried about, you know, just stating something just based on opinion, that's they could rationalize and say, this is where I'm coming from. It's not to, again, get anybody upset. It's just to say, look, we have a great idea. Maybe we could try this. I just think that, you know, the basic communication and dialogue has been broken. While technology has given us the ability to do this, there's no excuse for it. We can share ideas, we can network, and we can bounce things off each other. We know now all you have to do is look to brother and sister agencies of relative size, relative demographics, and you can see what works and what doesn't work. We could do that, sure. It's at our fingertips. And I think that why not? In this age of information sharing, why not do that?
Do you find that officers first on the job, let's say they just got hired, or maybe in their first couple of years, or anywhere too, just not just around here, but across Jersey or the country, that they're sort of hesitant about speaking up or saying things because they know or they feel that, well, hey, I've only been on the job for X amount of time, nobody will listen to me anyway, so I'll just kind of do as I'm told.
You know, there's a certain part of that, but I don't know that that's, you know, fair to say that goes by any type of tenure or seniority. I think it's almost, like I said, industries, as organizations as a whole, that you feel like we're the last voices, yet we're the, you know, it's open season to criticize from head to toe everything that we're doing. And some of it's justified, no doubt, clearly, right? But I'm saying the voices aren't given that same type of, I guess, equity. In the conversation, where some of these questions could be easily answered. But again, like I've always been consistent on, I think that we've allowed our mission statements, our objectives, our philosophies to be hijacked by people that aren't in the trenches per se. So we kind of have ourselves to blame for that.
What do you think should be done to help, I guess, clarify any mission statement, any department guidelines that any police department anywhere is putting together, not just for the public, but for their own inner department communication? What kind of improvements can be done to make things better, easier, more effective overall for any number of practices?
So I've openly said this, and I've taken some criticism for it, and I welcome it. I think, not because, again, I think it's purposeful, not because I think this is evil intent on the part of administrations, but
right.
I think that they are so desperate to appease the communities at large, and I'm not saying that's not significant, that they sacrifice and they do it backwards, that they worry about their outward communication first before the inward communication has to occur. So I've always said, if you take care of what's happening within the four walls of your building, I think that will then transcend into the four corners of your community. When the information is shared, when the message is internalized, when the empathy is shared within the hallways of a building, again, it's like oxytocin, right? It's contagious. That will then be employed out on the street. You can't, and again, that's why the one chapter in the book is called Jekyll Hyde. You can't have it. We're inside the building. We're stabbing each other, again, philosophically.
Right, right.
But then expect an empathetic connection with the community out there. It's just not going to happen, right? You're asking people to wear two faces, and I think that's impossible. Again, I'm not saying it's purposeful.
Right.
I'm saying I think it is kind of forsaken because, oh yeah, he knows what we have to do. Oh yeah, she knows what we have to do. Oh, they know what we have to do. You know, they were given the policy. They were given it in email. They were trained. And I could tell you, when that message or when the culture is not internalized first, I think it then gets confused when it's being deployed out in the field.
Whether it's something internal or public perception, whatever it is, what are some of the biggest challenges facing law enforcement today? I mean, how difficult is it with whatever office, whatever rank you are, how difficult is it? What are some of the challenges facing law enforcement today that I know you've been in law enforcement for 22 years, but what are just some of the challenges in New Jersey or across the country that are making things, you know, like the book, A Crucible to Manage Mission Impossible? What are some of those challenges that you think there's not enough conversations about or not enough active solutions being put into play?
I just think what's, you know, literally sitting in front of you is obvious. Recidivist offenders that, again, this isn't casting a judgment on an individual.
Right.
It's casting judgment on a behavior and a pattern of behavior. So the same way that people could say there's certain patterns of behavior that a man or a woman shouldn't be a police officer because they've exhibited certain patterns of behavior, well, there's certain individuals that have exhibited patterns of behavior that they shouldn't be able to be given the opportunity to go ahead and do that same thing again. So I think while it applies to us and we're accepting that challenge now with the oversight, with all the mechanisms in place to weed out these ones, I think it would only be a fair conversation to say, well, why don't we do that same thing with the offenders who are committing these heinous crimes and offenses repetitively?
Right.
And then we are the ones who are suffering the disparaging remarks from the public. Why aren't you doing more about this? So It puts us in a very delicate situation where we don't want to be caught saying, well, that's because politician A or politician B. You don't ever want to do that, even if that's the way we feel. You don't want to do that because then what are we doing? We're just pitting more people against each other. Nobody wins.
Good point.
So I'm not a fan of that. I've never been a fan of it. You're never going to hear me say thumbs up to this one, thumbs down to that one, because I'm just not a fan of it. I'm saying, though, we always say yes to the deal, per se, and shake hands when it seems like it's in a simultaneously increased oversight and accountability, simultaneously cut them loose, Bruce, on the, you know, the enforcement perspective of it. It just doesn't make sense.
Do you feel that there's rising pressures from the public, from society, to do more or to do less in any way? And is that frustrating in any way, just going to work every day? Or in any conversations that you've had with any number of people in law enforcement?
What's frustrating for me is, as I alluded to before, I visited some of the hotspots in the country that have been under the most scrutiny. And I could tell you, if you just walk the streets and you talk to who I call the people, and most people are good. Most people are good. There's people who live in certain areas that say openly, honestly, that, yeah, they want police there. They want police doing their job. They want to be treated with human dignity and respect, of course. But however, again, their message then gets hijacked. So I just think that it's the ones with the most, I guess, input that is not fair and it's not equitable. And I don't think it's representative of what most people want. I think if you were to do blind polls and surveys, I'm not saying it's whether or not people are fans of police or not. I think but fans of what police were meant to do, and that's to, you know, prevent crime and apprehend violators and offenders. Yeah, that's what people want. I don't think they want their stores being smashed and goods stolen. Those are people who are business folks, right? Doesn't mean if they support the police or not. Their goods now are taken off their shelves. I don't think people want their car stolen.
No. I imagine not.
But here we go. But you see how the message gets hijacked. What's the message that you see? We'll make sure you lock your car. While I don't disagree with that, clearly, I was taught when I was 4 years old, don't take something that doesn't belong to you.
Right.
We can't say that. That's just automatically skipped. And I'm like, well, that's kind of crappy. We just now pass this burden onto the victim.
Right. Very true.
And I'm like, you want to at all mention that the violator in this, this is the 13th time he or she has done it, and they haven't even reached the age of 15? Do you want to have that conversation? I mean, so this is what I mean. If we're going to have the conversation about being critical of police response, we're going to have the conversation being critical of, you know, citizens' behavior as far as not locking their stuff up or putting themselves in precarious situations, I think we should also have the conversation about the offender.
What do you think can be done, either your opinion, anything you've had with people in law enforcement across the country about some of the issues that have come to light with excessive force or racial relations or anything along those lines? What should be done to improve things, to, you know, check on behaviors, the personal behaviors of certain men and women in law enforcement who show any hint of those types of wrongful behavior or tendencies where they end up doing something just inhumane?
Well, I mean, let's be fair. These oversight mechanisms have not only been in place for a bit, they remain. Does that mean it's a source that you're going to eradicate the problem entirely? That can't be. And do you know why? Because who makes up police departments and police officers? Human beings. So with that comes perfectly imperfect. So you're never going to have something to eradicate it entirely, but you have oversight mechanisms that are in place throughout the country. I think that those things are already happening. I think the narrative that's been painted, though, is that, and you see this, anytime a high-profile incident happens, it paints the police in a negative picture where the police got it wrong. And I'm going to be very cliche. They got it wrong, let's say. You see that spread virally throughout the country, to include by our own. You know, we speak out and we say we condemn this behavior. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't do that. But I'm saying you don't see the equal to or greater than emphasis on what happens statistically dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens more frequently when the police get it right. So again, we've painted ourselves into a certain portrait that I think is going to be very difficult to do a reverse now imagery of. If you see, you know, a police officer shot and killed by a violent, you know, offender, those names don't get spread. Comparatively, if a police officer would do something wrong, it's all over. So I think that, again, this goes back to what I said. These, you know, we don't talk enough. We have these oversight mechanisms. You see, every time a whole high-profile incident happens, you see police chiefs and leaders from all over the country do what? They take that as an opportunity to advertise. We wouldn't tolerate that here. We have this mechanism in place here. We have strict, you know, abidance to our policy. So we have all that. So I think those things are already in place. You know, we get trained. We get, you know, it's mandated training. It's not like these things aren't happening. Of course they are. Of course they are.
What is the feeling of law enforcement just when there are, crimes on police or officers are being shot in the line of duty or killed, God forbid, or there are crimes on police, or the just overall with the rising crime rate? I mean, how has that changed the emotions of going to work every day for men and women in law enforcement? Do you find that there's any kind of rising emotion or rising fear with either just lawlessness, rising crime, maybe how certain people would view police in certain communities across the country? Has that created any kind of rising fear or anxiety?
Well, sure. I mean, I think that, again, officers that are out there every day patrolling the streets in various communities definitely have a heightened sense of awareness about them because of this isn't even a police problem. I think that overwhelmingly society doesn't feel like life is valued very much. So that certainly is going to, and yes, of course, when people are targeted, nobody respects the authority part of that anymore. So I think that then always turns into now there's some type of contention between an authority figure and somebody subject to that authority. So I think that, sure, that creates that heightened sense of awareness. What worries me more is when that becomes personalized. And again, that then turns into normal routine interactions, being abrasive, being cynical, because the chip on the shoulder per se, or just the mere fact that somebody is just working off of anxiety, which is, I think, understandable. Right. I mean, we see that on the flip side of it. And there's certain people who feel as if they have they get anxious when they deal with the police. Well, I think that the police are now showing, whether we want to deny it or not, we're showing that boomerang effect right back. I think there's a certain sense of anxiety, and that's being, you know, overtly displayed. Sure.
Tom, last question this morning that I have, you know, we've talked about it last time you were on the show and just in other conversations in the past as well. When it comes to support for police, and I know that you cover this in a chapter in your book, and you touched on it earlier in our conversation here. But in terms of people showing support for police, signs, talking about it in conversation, I mean, how does it make you feel? How does it make law enforcement feel to know that there are people out there either you know, hanging the blue flags outside their homes or putting the bumper stickers on or showing all these signs of support? You know, I guess given where things are with the state of police right now, how does it feel to be able to get all that support?
I think it's a shame that we even need that. I think it's very nice. I mean, but I have to tell you this, and I say this wherever I go, overwhelmingly people support the police.
Right.
That doesn't mean they have to fly a flag. Doesn't mean they have to put a sticker on. People have done that, I think, to go ahead and show because they see a need to show it, which is great. And we're blessed to receive that.
Sure.
But I have to tell you, I mean, I know myself, right? I know I've been offered, hey, you know, thank you for what you do, all this stuff. Like, way, I mean, countless more times than an average Joe. So that happens throughout the country. And we know, police officers know, most people are good.
Right.
Most people support police. And what I mean by that is, no, that doesn't mean it rises to the level of a decal. It's just that they know, okay, this is who they are, this is what they do. I think that we have allowed the personification of that we're not supported, and I don't believe that to be true. But I think that needs to be reinforced. So does it help? Sure, it does. Is it refreshing to see? Sure, it does. But not at the cost of diversifying us worse or polarizing us worse.
Right.
So I think it's one of those things we could do it just by mere fact of in social circles when a conversation's had, oh, this jerk cop did X, Y, Z. And you could say, well, you kind of deserved X, Y, and Z. Or
right.
You know what
Good
I mean?
Point,
we can help that in social circles. And I think it all goes back to what I always say, Vin. It's in communication, right? Taking the badge and the shield away from us and having the heart and the brain operate first.
I think a lot of people, to your point, they want to show more support because they do see what you're going through and they do see the different perceptions out there that aren't accurate, and they want to say, hey, thank you, and give you that extra love, so to speak. And I think but to your point, you're not looking for it, but I think, you know, people may say, hey, I want to, just because I see what you're going through.
I stopped and I helped a trooper out on an interstate with somebody that had trouble with their vehicle. And the person was so appreciative. And they said, oh, you know, my goodness, you know, can I at least get you guys coffee, something like that. And it was funny. The trooper cracked up because I was like, I tell you know what you could do? And the person looked at me and said, the next time you're involved in a social circle and anything comes up of law enforcement, I don't care how terrible it is, all I want you to say is this one time that you dealt with the police, they were really helpful and really cool to you. Can you do that?
Fair enough.
They go, that's,
fair enough.
That's easy. I
Done.
Went, great.
Sure.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
Just a little conversation.
Word of mouth.
Spread the word.
Word of mouth. That's it.
Tom, I appreciate you coming on here again to talk about, you know, what's in your book, but just kind of the state of law enforcement across New Jersey and the country right now.
Yeah.
But appreciate you coming on, and you're definitely always welcome back on.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
That is Tom Rizzo, police captain here in New Jersey and also author of the book, Kapikaze, A Crucible to Manage Mission Impossible. You can check it out on Amazon or wherever you find books. It is an absolutely great read, to say the least. So Tom did a great job putting that book together. So check it out. More Short Time with Vin and Dave coming up next on 94.3 The Point.
Hey, this is Tony Gaga. You need a radio guy. You got to go to the radio guys that I go to. Vin and Dave on 94.3 The Point.
Whether you're in the early stages of investing, getting ready to retire, or planning your estate, you need a financial planner who will guide you on a clear path with honesty and transparency. Shoreline Wealth Management understands that you're more than your money, and they strive to help you realize your best life as they align your finances with your goals. Best of all, Shoreline's straightforward approach will include you in the process. Shoreline Wealth Management is your financial anchor, committed to helping you weather life's storms. Visit shorelinewealth.com for more information today. Shorelinewealth.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Short Time with Vin and Dave. Vin Abneau, Dave Crossan with you as we put a bow on another show.
A bow on another show. Well done, buddy.
We had some fun in the open talking about strange New Jersey laws and also a little bit about some of the best beach views here at the Jersey Shore.
Mm-hmm.
94.3thepoint.com, 94.3thepoint app. Just click on my name. You'll be able to find those articles and so much more. Go to the Short Time tab as well. Our guest on the show this morning was Tom Rizzo, a police captain here in New Jersey at a municipal police department. He's also the author of a book, Kapikaze, Crucible to Manage Mission Impossible. You could find it on Amazon. It's a really great read. Definitely gives you a lot of unique perspective on law enforcement internally and public perception, government, and so forth. And Tom Rizzo really always has great perspective. Always appreciate having him on. He's, you know, he's a great guy. He has a great way of explaining things, and people love coming to see him and talking to him and working with him.
He's a straight shooter.
Yeah, you know, he provides, you know, very direct. You know, we certainly had to tackle a couple tough topics and challenges this morning, but he, you know, he goes all across the country talking about those issues and many more. With everything that we discussed this morning, Dave, and you know what? He provides, you know, at the very least, I think, an opportunity for everybody to hear him out, listen.
Exactly.
You know, maybe these are some changes we should implement to help
things
out police.
Things to consider, yeah,
or
I agree.
To you know, in certain cases, make sure that they're accountable. And, you know,
bring
everybody's
awareness.
Doing the right
I agree.
Thing. But also, you know, addressing the significant amount of restrictions on police
Correct.
In New Jersey. The you know, applications are down. And then there's just this divide. There's the whole anti-police movement. But there's a lot of people, especially around, you know, New Jersey, Ocean and Monmouth County, that do love and support the police. Our local police and state police here in New Jersey, and going to work and doing the right thing, keeping us safe, protecting us. And we should do more to show police, you know, as a society, that we do care and that we do appreciate what these men and women are going out there and doing every day for us.
I think it's so important to bring awareness to your point, the different restrictions, the different things that they have to do. And again, there has to be rules, there has to be regulations. But I think the key thing and my takeaway from the interview is the transparency. That we understand, you know, not everybody's going to agree 100%, but bring more awareness what the police are going through. And one point that he brought up that I liked, for a lot of people, they'll go up to a police officer and say, hey, thank you so much, and really embrace
right.
what they do. And his response was, you know what, pay it forward. I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate you. You know, what I'm doing is something that, you know, you appreciate, you like, you understand, and you support, but do something nice for somebody else or pass it forward to somebody else so that it is more of an awareness that what they're doing is for our best interests.
Absolutely. So, I mean, listen to police, go to police, have a conversation, thank them for their service, for what they do.
Right.
Local police, or if you come across a state trooper here in New Jersey as well. I mean, a lot of great police chiefs and police officers and everybody among the ranks here in Ocean and Monmouth counties and across New Jersey do such great things for us, do so much to keep us safe and protect us and be there for us, to counsel us.
Look out for each other is another thing.
So, yeah, the next time you're able to... out and about, you know, you see a police officer, go up to him and thank him. Just say, hey, thank you for what
they
you
have a
do
tough
to help and protect our community and keeping us safe, and thank them for doing what they do, and maybe have a conversation.
Right.
It doesn't have to be about anything in particular going on. You can just talk about how you're doing that day.
I agree.
Or,
well,
I
sir.
Don't know, talk about a different sports game you saw or
yeah.
something going on in the community. Or
they
maybe
are, and they
what
are
brought
part
you
of
to
the
that particular
community.
Place.
Exactly.
Maybe it's a store, a park, a ball game. You happen to see him, say, hey, what do you think of the game or something like
Correct.
That. So
I agree.
Police officers everywhere. We love you. We appreciate you. We thank you for everything you do. All law enforcement, all police across our Jersey Shore and New Jersey community. So thank you for what you do. And thank you to Tom Rizzo for joining us here this morning. We got another great show on deck for next Sunday. Short Time of Vin and Dave continues a week from now. Have a great Sunday and a great week ahead, everybody. Dave, you as well.
Good, thanks. Stay well.
More Short Time of Vin and Dave next Sunday, 94.3 The Point, following Short Sports Talk from 6 to 7, then Short Time of Vin and Dave 7 to 8. We'll talk to you soon right here, 94.3 The Point.
Hi, this is Christy Pierce-Rampone, former U.S. women's soccer team captain, Olympic gold medalist, World Cup champion, and Point Borough High School alum, and you're listening to Shore Time with Vin and Dave on 94.3 The Point. Tune in for some real conversation with Dave and Vin. You don't want to miss this.
Whether you're in the early stages of investing, getting ready to retire, or planning your estate, you need a financial planner who will guide you on a clear path with honesty and transparency. Shoreline Wealth Management provides clarity through the complexity with offices in Manchester and Manahawkin. Shoreline Wealth Management is your financial anchor. Visit shorelinewealth.com for more information and start your financial journey with comfort and security today. Shorelinewealth.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.